Welcome to the Crooked Forest Podcast. I'm your host, Holly Noonan, and we will be discussing affordable housing for sensitive people and all aspects of paradigm-changing trends in natural building and how it relates to your health, like living in neighborhoods that are designed specifically for the microbiome. We'll also explore creative solutions for affordable home ownership, like community land trusts and cooperatives, and delve into permaculture and regenerative systems design. If that's what you're interested in, you're in the right place, and we're glad you're here. Joining us today is Leah Olson, who is the Community Outreach Coordinator and Program Facilitator for Community Rebuilds in Moab, Utah. Community Rebuilds is a visionary affordable housing agency whose mission is to build energy-efficient housing, provide education on sustainability, and improve the housing conditions of the workforce through an affordable program. They offer educational and service opportunities via workshops, internships, workshare programs, and a natural building certificate that sources volunteer labor. Most courses or workshops offered on natural building are extremely costly, thus creating a barrier for people to enter the field. Community Rebuilds provides the opportunity to learn these skills while supplying a free construction crew for the build, making straw bale building possible and their homes more affordable. Welcome, Leah. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks, Holly. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this conversation since our last conversation. How about we start out by you telling us about Emily Niehaus and the origin story of the Community Rebuilds program?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So Moab has this interesting history where we had uranium boom. So uranium mining was really popular here in around the 50s, 60s. And so really that boom created a workforce here that then after the boom was done was kind of unsustainable for the economy. So there was a lot of trailers built here and a lot of kind of first homes built here that were pre-modern building codes. So there was a lot of unhealthy carcinogens used, and they just were not healthy homes for the community. And so Emily Niehaus, our founder of Community Rebuilds, she began the organization in the mid-2000s when she was a loan officer at the time and really realized that there was a lack of affordable housing in the Moab community and a lack of healthy housing. So she had this great idea to use dirt cheap materials that were locally sourced. So locally sourced sand, straw, clay, water, to build these straw bale homes. And those homes were used to replace some of the trailers from the uranium boom. So this was kind of a really inventive solution to the housing crisis here in Moab. So founded in 2010 and have been building homes ever since.
Amazing. It's super visionary program. And when you say dirt cheap, like I find that so interesting and funny because, yeah, it's locally sourced materials, but dirt is literally the best building material. So Community Rebuilds is one of our primary role models because you pair natural building with affordable housing. So can you tell us more about the natural building focus and why it's important to you and also your water conservation designs?
Yeah, so our values are really centered on what's going to be best for our neighbors and seeing our neighbors as, you know, even our low and very low income neighbors, you know, we're all humans who deserve healthy shelter. And then also kind of rooted in the value that our building should be responsive to the local environment and our climate crisis at hand. So we really have adapted this model to kind of center on three main components. So we have the affordable housing piece, our climate goals, and also education. And so really to us, we The natural building and affordable building, those have, for most agencies, go at odds to each other. Mm-hmm. So whatever is naturally built isn't always the most affordable.
Right.
Often naturally built homes are really costly. Right. So we've tried to adapt this model to be able to be a fit for both. So it is, you know, a really low footprint design that has a real beauty and simplicity to it, very low carbon impact. In fact, we have been prioritizing materials that are, in fact, carbon sequestering. Yeah. So things like, you know, some wood paneling on the exterior that is actually taking carbon out of the atmosphere. So this we found is in tune with our local landscape. You know, a lot of our materials are locally sourced and from our community. And so we also run a design program in-house. So we have our lead design and planner and her team. So Jessica and her team just are doing really incredible work to use things like solar arrays to create passive and active solar designs for our house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, adding things like, you know, water conservation design, especially being located in the Southwest. Anytime you're building or thinking about infrastructure, you have to think about water.
Absolutely.
And so we just hosted a permaculture course here, partnering with USU, and created a really incredible, you know, kind of permaculture garden that catches water from our roof into, I believe that's a 1,200 gallon tank that feeds the permaculture garden. And also using things like really high energy efficient appliances. We've really kind of pushed the dial in, you know, doing things like receiving Utah's first residential gray water permit in 2017 on the homes that we were building for the Living Building Challenge. So really trying to kind of push the dial on being, you know, being efficient and efficient in perpetuity, affordable for our families, so they're using less water. Their water bills and utility bills are generally cheaper. They pay about $8 to $15 a month on utilities, which in comparison to other homes is really incredible.
Oh my God, the whole program is incredible. Yeah. What is the Living Building Challenge?
So the Living Building Challenge is a really interesting international accreditation, and really it's a philosophy, a holistic philosophy on how to build that's good for people, good for the earth, good for the community, and in a way that's really aesthetic too. So, so we are working towards our certification for, we have two twin homes, which is kind of a duplex home that we built. And these four homes are expected to receive the first ever affordable living building certification in the world.
God.
And plans to be the 24th living building in the world.
Oh
so,
my God, so
there are not many homes have received this certification. It's super rigorous. And it's administered through the International Living Future Institute. And we have a whole YouTube video on our YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel is just Community Rebuilds.
Okay.
And I really encourage, you know, all of your listeners to go check out our video that kind of details our process going through that. And, you know, what it took to receive all the petals, and hopefully in the next, you know, in the next, you know, year or so, we will receive that final stamp of approval, adding these two twin homes, housing, you know, four different families to the Living Building Challenge.
You guys are amazing. I am just like fangirling right now. I'm so impressed with you. It's amazing, amazing work you were doing. Unbelievable. Okay, so you said in our last conversation that you guys currently clock about 30,000 volunteer hours a year. Can you please tell us how your volunteers participate and how homeowners team up to work on each other's home and how the self-help home loans work? How does this work?
Sure. Yeah, Holly, I will. I'll start with actually the last part of that question. So our self-help home loans mean that our homeowners who are low and very low income receive these 502 loans from the USDA.
Okay.
And part of the requirements for these loans are the fact that they're self-help. And so if you're not familiar with the self-help program, it means that homeowners are putting in hours into their build themselves. Mm-hmm. So we actually have homeowners on site with our build supervisors, our other volunteers, our other, you know, workshare participants, et cetera, mm-hmm. You know, working towards their builds and inviting their family and friends out to help as well. So generally the self-help program requires 40 hours a week by the USDA.
Okay.
But we said, ooh, that's not accessible. You know, that's not accessible to our neighbors who might be working multiple jobs. Maybe they are more of an elderly household. Maybe they're a single parent household.
Right.
So we negotiated with the USDA saying, we're bringing 30,000 volunteer hours a year to this build. You know, can we reduce the hours, directly offset the hours that the homeowners are working? And they said, yes. They said, yes, we have our homeowners putting in about 23 hours a week instead of the 40, which hopefully we can continue to reduce that number of hours just to keep making our program accessible to folks.
But that's a lot. That's still
we
a lot.
Have volunteers who come in a lot of different capacities. So Holly, earlier you mentioned that natural building is a really hard industry to break into. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really costly.
Yep.
There's a lot of barriers and we find for most people cost being the primary one.
Okay.
Workshops are really expensive.
Yep.
And to take time off from work to go learn can be really hard for folks. So we said, ooh, there's a need in the natural building world for labor force.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be on the front lines of educating the next generation of natural builders.
Right.
So we invite folks who come to us who want to learn, and we run AmeriCorps programs. So people can come and stay with us for a year and be an AmeriCorps apprentice, a building apprentice on site, actively learning under supervisors, working through a building curriculum that we developed.
And can we just stop there for a
there's
second?
Other opportunities too. You can be a design build apprentice.
Okay.
You can come and volunteer with us as a workshare participant.
Uh-huh.
And we house you for free, give you access to bulk foods, a living stipend.
Wow.
And then you're able to go to site and hands-on learn. We have people who, if those opportunities don't work for them, maybe they want to do an independently structured internship and help us with, you know, a part of our program that they're most interested in.
Okay.
But we also have folks who come to us and they're like, we just love what you're doing. We just love the fact that you're building affordable, sustainable, energy efficient shelter for low and very low income families.
Right?
So they come and just give their hours. We have a lot of community members who will just come out to site and build with us, which is super cool.
Wow.
So that is kind of what encompasses those 30,000 volunteer hours that we really celebrate each year.
Yeah.
And really need to make the program affordable and accessible for the families that we serve.
Right. You're really working hard on making this a win-win for people. Like with the AmeriCorps volunteers, for example, when someone is an AmeriCorps volunteer for you, they get some kind of abeyance on their college debt. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So their debt payments are, you know, suspended for the time being while they're serving. They also get at the end of the service term, a certain amount of money, you know, several thousand dollars that they can use in addition to the living stipend that they receive to pay off their debt.
Yep.
Or if they don't have debt, some of our service members don't, then they can use it towards future schooling and education opportunities, which is really cool. And for those who are really interested, maybe you have listeners who are interested in learning natural building.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of different schools like Yestermorrow School for Natural Building that can receive that those dollars that you you know, receive at the end of your service term.
Oh, wow.
So if towards courses in natural building, which is really cool.
So if you have an AmeriCorps volunteer that basically racked up some credit for education, they can use that credit towards a course at Yestermorro in Vermont?
That's exactly right.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. So tell me a little bit about how you determine low and very low income. That's typically AMI. So that's average median income, which is, I'm not sure what that is for Moab, but how do you determine what low income is for eligibility for your homes?
Sure. So yeah, the literal answer, you're exactly right. We work with AMI, and it's 80% or below AMI. Mm-hmm. For those who are not familiar with AMI, area median income, and so that means that you cannot earn more than 80% of the area median income. Mm-hmm. And so this means a few things in Moab. Moab, we're in a housing crisis. Just where we sit, we're in a valley that's surrounded on all four sides by protected lands. Mm-hmm. We have some of our beautiful national parks like Arches and Canyonlands. Mm-hmm. We have the La Salle Mountains that are the second tallest mountain range in the state of Utah. Mm-hmm. We have Forest Service and BLM land. And so the next largest city is an hour and 45 minutes away. Oh, wow. And you really don't have access to land outside of this valley or very limited access. So it creates this pinch. So housing prices here are really crazy in comparison to some of the other towns. We're really similar to a lot of other adventure towns that you'll see, like Bend, Oregon or Park City. Mm-hmm. And so it creates this really interesting kind of series of factors. But right now we're seeing some of those for a family of one to four, just to kind of give an example. Mm-hmm. For a family of one to four this year, it's almost up to $70,000 that you can make and still qualify for our program. Mm-hmm. But with just such high living costs here, it's still, you know, is considered a low or very low income family. And I really want to talk about also what low income means in a housing justice framework. Mm. We're really working to shift the paradigm. To us, affordable housing generally, in a more of a national framework, you see a lot of homes that all look the same and maybe, you know, aren't using the healthiest of materials. Mm. And we say, no, affordable housing to us is cutting edge. Mm. It's energy efficient. It's healthy, beautiful, mm. low environmental impact, in concert with the environment, in fact, and mindful of the needs of the surrounding community and a creative expression of our homeowners. Mm. So we view housing as shelter and not just an investment vehicle. And we see the value of our neighbors and community members. And we really reflect that through the homes that we build. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of wanted to mention that as well. Mm-hmm. And really encourage folks to check us out on our website and social media pages that I'll share later on. But the homes we build are really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, is valued in our organization.
I tell you what, I really agree with you about the social justice aspect of this. As you might know, the Crooked Forest value system really centers around normalizing healthy living spaces for low-income people, because that is not what's normal in this country right now. Typically, when right. people are low-income, they're living in homes that make them sick. And so this is one of the ways that you guys are doing really radical social justice work, and I applaud you.
Thank you.
So you guys have, I took a look at the map on your website. You guys are one of the builders that are working on a community land trust that has 300 homes planned on this community land trust. Is that right?
Yes.
And I think you're in phase two of that project.
Yep.
So tell me a little bit about this ecosystem in Moab. Like who are you, how are you working with the city of Moab and the Moab Housing Task Force to create fair housing solutions?
Sure. So we, through our work on the Housing Task Force, we saw a need for a community land trust model to pair with our projects and other affordable housing projects in our town. So for folks not familiar with the community land trust, a community land trust, as it's operating here, essentially means that our homeowners don't own the land that their home is being built on. They lease that land for 99 years and have a fee, an original fee associated with their build that goes to the land trust, essentially to pay for the infrastructure that's required to get the neighborhood started. Mm-hmm. And they lease that land, they own everything above the land. Mm-hmm. And whenever you go to sell that home, the next homeowner would renew that lease. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really ingenious solution to making building homes and owning homes in Moab accessible to folks. Mm-hmm. Land is super high dollar here, mm-hmm. and would, you know, make it outside of the reach of many of our homeowners. Mm-hmm. But by having a land trust with, you know, just the fee that's associated with it, they can make that dream a reality, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. So that's something that was really important to us. And we placed, placed board members on, our executive director served as the chair for the Community Land Trust when it was originally established. Okay. So we applied for a 501c3, status mm-hmm. for the land trust. So it is currently operating as a 501c3. Mm-hmm. And we, as an organization, helped to identify land and secured the land donation for these 300 housing units, which is really incredible. So that was kind of the seed funding, having the vehicle, the nonprofit vehicle of the land trust, to then get the land donation as kind of the original funding source, was how we made that happen here in Moab, mm-hmm. and are continuing to, try to find other land opportunities in Moab, and mm-hmm. now have an executive director for the Moab Area Community Land Trust. Mm-hmm. So it's a self-operating body. But there's a few other things that are really notable that we have worked with the City of Moab and the Moab Housing Task Force on over the last several years. Things like advocating to successfully change code within Moab City to unlock density. Mm. So this was in 2017, the code changed to unlock density, helped by allowing flag driveways to be included in the body of lot square footage required to build. So this actualized a third home on our project that year. We have done things like brought first deed restrictions to primary residents. So we introduced deed restrictions in Moab for primary residents and no nightly rentals in 2016. Oh. Just really continue to advocate locally to advance housing policy on the local level. So both within the city and the county and on a state level. We installed the first compostable toilet in a residential zone in Utah and worked with our local inspector to kind of push the dial in that way. Mm-hmm. We were the first ever organization in Utah to build a home on a community land trust. Mm-hmm. So not only helping establish it, but helping with kind of breaking that first barrier of builds. So, so it's really a collaborative partnership that is ongoing and really necessary to, try to express our values and help all of the other builders and organizations locally who are trying to also build affordable housing, make their needs met too.
Right. Yeah, really. God, I see how this is just an amazing example of collaboration that a lot of other municipalities should follow suit. So a couple of follow-up questions. Who donated the original land for the community land trust? Was it the city of Moab?
So it was actually a private family.
Okay.
So an anonymous donor.
Wow.
Locally, okay. And who wants to remain anonymous, mm-hmm. Donated the parcel of land. Their family was a ranching background, I believe, in Moab, and they had this land, and they said, we don't need this land. You know, our family, we're happy with our modest living situation. And, this large, I believe it's around 40 acres,
okay.
Plot of land is excessive. And we want to give it back to the community to create affordable housing,
wow.
Which is, really an incredible act of charity and in line with housing justice, giving the land back mm-hmm. to the local community.
Right. And to have it be used for something that's so visionary and really setting example for other municipalities around the country, the city must be thrilled with this, the way that this development has taken shape.
Right.
One other question. You had said that you changed some zoning structure to allow for flag driveways and a third building. Can you say more about that?
Sure. So this was, before my time working here, but it's essentially, allowing. So flag lots are essentially these long, narrow driveways that extend off of the main, road that is next to your property. And so we included, changed the code to include it in the body of lot square footage required to build. So you have to have a certain amount of property square footage for your build. And so so the code originally excluded that flag lot.
I see.
And we now have included it in Moab to be able to actualize more homes or build more homes on those properties. So in this case, we were working on a build and we're able to build a third home on a piece of property with that flag lot included in the body of lot square footage.
Got it. So it increased density. It increased density in your building in Moab.
Exactly.
Okay. Wow. Amazing. Yeah. One of the challenges that we have here in Silver City is that there are plenty of lots that are available in the surrounding hills, but they have minimum square footage requirements that are often 1,300 to 1,500 square feet. That's a really big house, which is one of those things that mm-hmm. makes it impossible for people who need affordable housing to access. So I'm really encouraged to hear about zoning changes like that. That's important stuff. So, okay. You guys have grown a lot in the last couple of years, especially. Has that been challenging?
Oh my gosh, yes. very challenging. Essentially we scaled up around 400% in the matter of the last 2 to 3 years for the number of homes that we are building a year.
How many?
Originally, when we were first founded, we were building anywhere from 1 to 4 homes a year, depending on what the project was. And we got to the point where we were seeing a real need in Moab to build more housing.
Hmm.
Our wait list was getting to the point where, folks were, staying on for, anywhere from 6 months to 2 years is what we were saying, but it was getting closer to 2 years and people were getting priced out of the area, having to move out.
Wow.
And so we tuned in, listened to the needs of the community, and it coincided with the accessibility of land on the community land trust that we were then as an organization applying for to build on. And we said, why don't we try to create a model right now that is building more homes? So we adapted going from a 4 straw bale wall build, which is very labor intensive, and we were really only able to get the specialized labor, you know, bring in students and have instructors to build, you know, anywhere from 1 to 4 homes a year. But we were saying, no, we really want to build more like 16 homes. And so we adapted our model and we're able to explore different materials. We're able to now use blown cellulose insulation as 3 of the wall systems with 1 optional straw bale wall for families.
Okay.
And the blown cellulose insulation, it's still a recycled material, and it's able to integrate more effortlessly with local contractors where they recognize the plans that that use blown cellulose insulation. And so it really worked for us. And then we're able to still bring in folks, educate folks, still do the optional straw bale wall on our homes, and you know, still be doing plastering workshops, but be able to offer you know, for ourselves and for others who want to replicate, you know, some of our different building models, an option that that maybe fits their needs in their community. Maybe they don't have a natural building or sustainable building labor force that they can, you know, tap like we do here. Right. And so so it's been a really exciting transition. You know, one with lots of road bumps. Right. You know, last year we were building, you know, scaled up to build 16 homes on the land trust in, you know, at once. And so working in batches of 8 homes and or cohorts of 8 homes. Mm-hmm. And had, you know, a lot of road bumps with being the first organization to build on a community land trust in the state of Utah. Mm. Also with, you know, our changing climate and the heat and supply chain issues. Mm. And, you know, there was a lot of hurdles that we were able to get over. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's in large part thanks to our super dedicated staff mm. and volunteers and homeowners who stuck it out to the very end. Wow. So, you know, it was a big accomplishment.
Yeah. Amazing. I can imagine there would be some growing pains in transitioning so quickly though.
Yes. Yeah. We were able to, change our models. So when we were building 1 to 4 homes, internships, and these internships were natural building internships, which we very well may go back to if we do another 4 straw bale wall build.
Okay.
But it didn't match the pace and the timeline for the builds on the community land trust. So we said, you know, we're going to make this program more accessible to folks, you know, offer, you know, maybe 1 to 2 month workshare programs where folks can come out, get experience on a construction site, get access to our organization, our build staff, our build apprentices, mm-hmm. our alumni network, and be able to help with these builds while they're going simultaneously. So we have 16 homes being built at once right now.
Wow.
And 8 homes are at the same point in the build, and the next 8 are staggered. So that way we're always able to keep building and not have a lag in between. So we adapted our model, are able to bring in more folks who can get access and take on more apprentices, hire more staff, and, you know, continue to try to scale up, which has been, you know, a lot, you know, like you said, a lot of growing pains, but really exciting. And it's been a really cool opportunity to unlock a model for some communities that that the 4 straw bale wall all natural form to finish build wasn't working for.
Wow. I really love how you're listening. Like you're really listening closely to the needs of people, to the homeowners, to the interns, to the the program participants, you're adapting and you're changing, you're listening, you're not being attached to any one kind of format, which is really exciting. It allows it to evolve into something that's really, really working. Let's talk a little nitty gritty here. Like, are you talking about one wall, your south facing wall is straw bale, and then the other three walls are stick built with blown in cellulose insulation?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. So we have the south facing wall, straw bale with the mud and the plaster finishes. Mm-hmm. And that, it's just an undeniably, you know, better insulation value. Yeah. Once you get all of the plaster on, mm-hmm. than other wall systems. Mm-hmm. But the blown cellulose insulation is a really incredible opportunity for us to be able to subcontract certain parts of our build out.
Got it.
Where we're able to, you know, subcontract out the insulation and, you know, not go through several different rounds of plastering,
right,
which we find is inaccessible to a lot of our families. And especially when we're in a climate zone that, mm-hmm. That is so hot, there's mm-hmm. only certain times of the year that you can really successfully build with mud, mm-hmm. And have it be, you know, really strong and, you know, not gonna, you know, flake off over time or crack as much. And yep. So we have been doing in the spring and the fall, a lot of our plastering mm-hmm. and work with mud mm-hmm. and stacking of straw. Mm-hmm. And, then in the other summer months, doing things like house wrapping, you know, we do a full airtight vapor mm-hmm. barrier on our homes, that really help to with things like, you know, recycled bike tires mm-hmm. as, you know, part of this, kind of airtight barrier, mm. In our homes. So that way, they're as energy efficient as possible,
wow.
which is really great.
So how thick are those stick built walls with the blown in cellulose?
So those, I believe I'd have to ask our build team. But I know we do, a double stud offset wall on our entire home to prevent the air, the hot air and cool air exchange,
yeah, okay.
You know, through those leaking mm-hmm. Pieces. But yeah, I would have to check on exactly what the dimensions are
okay.
on those.
And what is the square footage that we're looking at here? What you guys have a variety of designs, presumably, but what's the square foot range of these houses?
Sure. Most of our homes are 1 to 2 bedroom homes.
Okay.
And they're very modestly sized and built. We try to minimize things like hallways. And so generally 900 to 1200 square feet
okay.
per house.
Okay.
And we're going to come out where our designers are working right now on coming out with a two-story home that will be slightly more, I believe that home will be more like 1500 square feet for some of our larger families
right, yep.
that are in need of housing.
Got it. Wow. Wow. So you guys really are hitting a winning formula here. What do you attribute that to? And are you having other cities beginning to implement your model? Are there other people besides me who are super interested in what you're doing?
Yeah, Holly, I really think anybody who comes and works with CR, they say the best part about CR are the people. You know, the people are really what makes this program possible. And for those of you who have been engaged in the natural and sustainable building worlds, the people are really what make it and what drive, you know, drive these building solutions and kind of community frameworks, and help pass the baton in education. And especially when you're building with straw and mud, there's a lot of hands that literally go into, you know, making this work. You know, going back to all of the volunteers, homeowners, community members, legislators, mm-hmm. workshare participants, staff, you know, everybody who makes this possible. That's really, I think, what our winning formula is. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we now have a network of folks who are able to kind of be tapped on the shoulder for, you know, if we have someone who is in North Carolina building, you know, having former lead builders in North Carolina who they can go and be in community with and, you know, expand our model into, you know, new places. And so that kind of gets into, you know, other cities beginning to implement our model. Yep. We have, you know, one alumni member in the UK who started a similar program. Wow. We have trained our Hopi Tetsqua to partners to replicate our program. Mm-hmm. So our Hopi partnership, that was, you know, a really exciting opportunity for us to kind of listen to the needs of our Hopi partners and go down and, you know, show, share with them what our program is and how that could be replicated and kind of help in that process. And so, so they have a fully functioning nonprofit that that they're operating. And we have a number of other folks as well. We have, you know, 30 inquiries or in counting of some of our First Nation families in surrounding areas to build there and to unlock barriers of housing. Mm-hmm. And we have probably around five different seeds planted in other communities, born out of alumni, mm-hmm. and other folks who are wanting to build CRs in their backyard, right on. In different states. Yep. And so it's just a really exciting you know, a way for us to continue to experiment. We're constantly changing and growing here at CR. So we're always experimenting in different models that we have work for different people, and different communities. And it's exciting to see how the own, you know, folks' own communities are building CRs from the ground up there. So,
right. So this is transformational, absolutely transformational on a community level, on a society level. I'd also love to hear about, say, two specific individuals. Maybe can you pick a homeowner and maybe an intern participant whose lives have been transformed by your program and tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. So I would say, as far as homeowners go, the first one that comes to my mind is Janice. Janice, she built her home as one of the first homeowners to build on a land trust. So we completed her home last fall. And Janice in our community is well known. Moab has 10,000 people total in the county. So it's a small town. And Janice is regarded as one of the kindest and most giving individuals, and who had a lot of barriers to housing. So Janice moved to Moab in the 90s. She purchased some modest land for a nursery, and she ran a community nursery here. And then she lost business in the 2008 recession, and she sold everything but the land to keep her head above water. And almost overnight, all of her work was swept out from under her feet. And she went on this, you know, life journey after that of hardship, trying to restabilize and she had to move away from Moab, got priced out, you know, then was trying to come back, and through our program was able to eventually be granted a mutual self-help 502 loan to begin construction for her very own home, something that she never thought was possible. And so just a year out of cancer treatment for Janice, the building process, it's hard to build a house, the very arduous building process began, she began building with her neighbors, and she has now found her dream home in her community here. And one of the things that Janice always says that sticks in my mind is, I have always had the ability to turn hardships into gifts, and this home is no exception. And so I think she's just a great example of someone who who wasn't able to stay in this community, and was able to, you know, find her way back here, and be able to live in a healthy, affordable home that she'll be at. It's her forever home. And she's now, you know, teaching all of her neighbors on the land trust, you know, some of her different permaculture and, you know, gardening design principles. And her garden is, you know, almost a year in, and it's really beautiful. So she's someone that I go in often and have like a cup of tea with.
I love it. For anybody who wants to know more about how these houses affect people, go to the Community Rebuilds website and look at the page of all of the happy inhabitants and residents of these houses. It's so inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Holly, to get back to your other question about, you know, volunteers and interns whose lives were changed, I want to talk about myself. I came to Community Rebuilds last year. I've been in Moab, you know, just over a year. And I had a lot of personal life transitions. I was in, you know, housing, education, justice, policy work, and advocacy in Oregon, the state of Oregon. I was caregiving for my dad. I was rehousing houseless and homeless families in Portland. And I really needed, you know, to have an avenue out. And I found Community Rebuilds and was really inspired by their work, and bridging, you know, the gap between affordability and doing it in a way that's good for our earth, and good for people. And so so I found my way to Community Rebuilds, and have just been thrilled with the work that I've been able to do here, and excited to see where Community Rebuilds is heading in the future.
Wow. Awesome. Thank you. I'm just so inspired. Oh my God. So you guys have 650 past and present interns, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Tell me about them.
Yeah. So we have folks who have joined us from all over the world. And so we have folks who have come internationally. Mm-hmm. You know, we have another, you know, another gentleman from the UK coming this fall. Someone, a Tunisian might be joining us this fall. And so really, you know, really trying to open our doors to all of our community members, in a really broadest of sense. And something that's really exciting about Community Rebuilds is the education piece. That's a third of our mission, and we really stand by it. And we try to make our doors open to anybody who is interested in learning more about our organization, interested in getting into the construction field, yep, for those who have been marginalized, mm-hmm, in that area of work. And so we have a really incredible body of prior interns and volunteers who are, you know, come from disadvantaged backgrounds or marginalized backgrounds in the construction industry. We have a predominantly female and non-binary, you know, workforce. Most of our workshare folks who come to us, you know, otherwise have maybe tried to get into the construction industry or who have been interested, but who haven't found it an accessible place, or who couldn't afford to take courses and learn about natural building or sustainable building practices. So so we have really tried to make this place a hearth space and gathering point for those who want to come to learn.
Right on.
We have people who have never stepped foot on a construction site, mm-hmm, and they might come and be with us for one of our workshare programs, spend a few months here, and really love it, mm-hmm, or sometimes really not, depending on the person.
Right.
But but it's just trying to make it accessible.
Amazing. You guys have just recently been celebrated for your inclusive education model, right?
Yes. So you'll have to keep an eye out. We had Patagonia actually come and shoot with us, which is really cool. And they came just about a month ago. We're in the process now of, potentially getting an article written or having, some other kind of celebration of the work that we do. Mm-hmm. And so it's really cool. And, that's not uncharacteristic to our founding. Mm-hmm. Like Emily Niehaus originally, back in 2012, only when we had been building for 2 years, she received a national recognition as a champion for change from the Obama administration and got to go there at a ceremony at the White House. And so it's this program's really been celebrated from and recognized from the founding. And, we continue to try to spread the word and open our doors to see how we can have more CRs, the more the better, in our opinion.
Right on. So thrilled to have you on the podcast today. This has just been amazing. It's hard to imagine that I could be more inspired, but I am after talking with you, Leah. So you just hosted one of your open houses on June 22nd. How did that go? And tell our listeners how they might, what do you got coming up? Like what, if there's any way for people to engage with you or come work with you, what does that look like?
Yeah, so it was so exciting. So this was the second round of 8 homes completed on the Community Land Trust second round of our 8 homes. And so it went really well. Our homeowners were thrilled. We passed all of our inspections. We had to pass our USDA inspection, our local inspection or our county inspection, and our in our community land trust inspection, and we were able to pass all of the inspections with flying colors, and really have it as a celebration point for our homeowners and staff and everybody whose hands and hearts went into this past build, and just to continue to celebrate as our model becomes more honed in and we continue to learn and improve. And so we're really excited to be working on the next round of 8 builds. And we're welcoming folks to come in this end of summer and fall and winter to join us and learn with us. We have some really exciting AmeriCorps positions that are currently open. If folks are interested in things like materials and carbon accounting, we have an AmeriCorps position for that. Wow. We have an AmeriCorps position for our design build apprentices and our build apprentices for a year-long apprenticeship under professional staff and following our curriculum. We have a work share program that I'm actively interviewing for right now, or interviewing folks for right now. And so that starts September 5th and it runs through October 31st. It's 8 weeks long and folks can come and live in our 2-story straw bale wall bunkhouse and have access to bulk foods and as modest living stipend and be able to come and work with us. And so free of charge. And so they're just exchanging their hours that help make our homes more affordable for an education opportunity and an opportunity to come and spend some time in beautiful Moab, Utah. So I would highly encourage folks to apply. We have limited spots. I also just to keep an eye out if these opportunities don't work for you, but you want to come and learn with us, we invite you out to Moab and, just get in contact with us. My email is outreach, just outreach at communityrebuilds.org. Or feel free to visit our website at www.communityrebuilds.org and keep an eye out. We're also on social media at Community Rebuilds. And so follow us on Instagram, Facebook, check out our website, keep an eye out for opportunities coming up. We would love to have you.
Right. I personally can't wait to come up and visit you guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today, Leah. And you guys just keep up the good work. What you're doing is amazing.
Thanks, Holly. And we look forward to you joining us.
Yeah.
And so we'll be excited to see you in person soon.
Awesome. All right. Take care. That's our show for you today. Thanks so much for joining us for the Crooked Forest podcast. Be sure to hop on over to crookedforestinstitute.org to subscribe and keep in touch with what we're up to. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.